Oh? The Arklow County's a tributary over in the Northern Territory. All the villages failed about 6 or 7 years back. No food, no money left to buy any in. They started marching downriver towards villages that did have food.
What happened?
Governor sent in the marshals, plus a few boosted mercenaries from off-planet, if you believe what people say. Them starving villages took a right pounding. Some escaped into the jungle, still there by all accounts. Lot of bandit reports in the north. Most got themselves killed. The rest got a 20-year work time sentence. The governor parceled them out to other villages to work just like Ivets. Families broken up, children never see their parents. He sucked his cheeks in, scowling. Yes, bad business. Rye sorted out the cloth he wanted, and on impulse bought a packet of sweet corn seed for Skyba, his wife. He offered the Lalonde notes again. "Cost you double that way," Len Buchanan said. "The LDC people at the spaceport, they don't give you anything like the proper exchange rate." Rye made one last attempt. "How about chickens?" Len pointed to a shelf given over to cryostats, their tiny green LEDs twinkling brightly in the gloomy cabin. "See that? Two of those chambers are crammed full of eggs. There's chickens, ducks, geese, pheasants, emus, and turkeys stored in there. I even got 3 swans. I don't need live chickens crapping on my deck." "Okay." Rye gave up. He dug into his inside pocket and offered his Jovian bank disc, feeling a little bit shabby. People should believe in their own planet's currency. If, when Schuster County became an important commercial region, he would make damn sure every transaction was made in Lalonde francs. Patriotism like that would be very popular with the voters. Len stood beside his wife as Rye walked back down the jetty. 10,000 born every second, he murmured. Gale chuckled. Aye, and all of them come to live here. From their vantage point in the river shallows, Eily and Scott gave Rye a cheery wave as he carried his cloth ashore. Another who had a Jovian bank credit disc, that made 78 known residents now. Quinn would be very pleased with them. Rye reached the end of the jetty just as Marie Skibbo arrived carrying a bulky shoulder bag. She gave him an uninterested glance and hurried on towards the Coogan. What'd she come to pick up? Rye wondered. Gerald's place was one of the prime Savannah homesteads, although the man himself was a complete self-righteous pain in the arse. Horst Elwes stood at the base of the church's wooden corner stanchion, holding the cloth bag full of nails and still managing to feel completely useless. Leslie didn't need anyone to hold the nails ready, but Horst could hardly let the Ivet work team assemble the church without being there, without at least the pretense of being involved. The church was one of the last of Aberdale's buildings to be put up. He didn't mind that at all. These people had toiled hard to build their village and clear the fields. They couldn't spare the time on a structure that would only be used once or twice a week, though he liked to think there would be more services eventually. Nor was it right they should do so. Horst could never forget how the cathedrals of medieval Europe had risen like stone palaces out to the mouldering, stinking wooden slums. How the church demanded the people of that time give and give and give. How fear was rooted in every soul and carefully nurtured. And because we were so arrogant, as aloof as God himself, we suffered a terrible price in later centuries. Which was right again. Such a crime deserved a penance that lasted for so long. So he held his services in the hall and never complained when only 30 or 40 people turned up. The church must be a focal point for unity, a place where people could come together and share their faith, not a barren, demanding tribute. And now the fields had been rotivated, the first batch of crops planted and the animals brought out of hibernation, Aberdale had a moment of time to spare. 3 Ivets had been assigned to him for a fortnight. They had built a long raft-like floor supported 0.5 meter off the ground by old tree stumps, then put up 4-meter-high stanchions to hold up the sloping roof. At the moment it looked like a skeleton of some boxy dinosaur. Leslie Atcliffe was busy hammering the trusses into place, while Daniel held them steady. Anne was busy cutting slates from the sheets of quartuk bark they had stripped off the felled trunks.